Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, my friends, to Life Transformation Radio. We are live right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, business strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 63 countries, such as the U.S., Canada, Brazil, Belgium, India, Australia, New Zealand, and a lot of different countries, so I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that has changed our lives and how we use this to help transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us right here live at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Tuesday through Friday. You can also join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community. I ask that you subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, or the Google Play Music app, or wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts. On the show, I bring on entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, other podcasters, and authors who are amazing at what they do and have an impact in the world around them. And my guest today does exactly that. You can call into the show during the live show and ask myself or the guest a question at 657-383-1109. Again, the number, 657-383-1109. If you catching us on the live broadcast, you can call in and be a part of the show. My team is standing by to field any weirdo calls because sometimes they get through. So here I am with Paul Maskill. Did I pronounce that right, Paul?
You did, Sean. 100% correct.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Dude, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here. Hopefully some callers call in and really excited to chat with you today.
Awesome, awesome, man. So I'm really pumped to have you on the show, man, because I know that you have a transformational story, and that is what the show is all about. So this episode is titled Business Freedom Formula with Paul Maskill. Paul started his first business in 2011. Before he knew it, he was working 60 to 80 hours a week until he realized that he had no freedom and the business needed him to survive. So Paul started systemizing everything by putting systems, processes, and key people in place. His revenue doubled to almost $500,000, while the number of hours he worked dropped below 40. Paul then sold his business for 3 times his net profit. He's now back into business ownership as well as an investor and a coach focused on helping business owners crush chaos so they can uncover the income and freedom they always knew was possible. You can connect with him on Facebook at facebook.com/businessfreedomformula. And you can go and connect with him on LinkedIn and his website, www.paulmaskill.com. So, Paul, man, my first question, why? Like, why are you in business? Why be an investor, a coach? Why do you do what you do?
It's a great question, Sean. And I think, it really goes back to previously, before business ownership, when I was working in the corporate finance world. So I did what everyone told me to do is status quo, go to school, get good grades, go to college, get better grades, get a job.
God.
Climb the corporate ladder for 40 years and then retire and you can enjoy life. But you got to put in all that work, those 40 hours, cubicle, corner office, climb the ladder, And all that nonsense that I realized after about 3 years of doing it was just not for me. And I realized that money was not about money at all. I needed to be happy. I needed to love what I do. And there's really no reason to like be miserable for 40 years to then try and enjoy life when you're 65. And who knows, by the time we got there, we might have to work till they're 75. So I think that's really the start of the why I'm doing what I'm doing. But then fast forward into, I left the corporate world, quit my job. Everyone looked at me like I was crazy. They thought that was the most unsecure thing I could ever do. Started my business, had success, but I really reached a plateau when I was probably, I was doing about maybe $250,000 in revenue, but that was when I was working 60 to 80 hours a week. And like, we were doing really well. There was clearly the demand there. We were growing like crazy, but I literally had no more time, no more physical energy, no more mental energy to continue growing it. There just was no more space. So I realized that, hey, I quit my job to have more freedom, to not have a cap on my income, and to build something that if I put in the work is actually worth something, whereas a job that I was working before wasn't achieving any of those. I didn't have freedom. My income was pretty much capped at 3% per year. Even when you get promoted, I was working in the finance industry from 2007 to 2010. So the worst time to work in the finance industry. So nobody was getting raises. And then when I was done, I couldn't like sell my job and cash in on the, you know, the work I put in over the time. So I realized halfway through this business journey of I'm basically in the same spot. I basically had a very stressful job. I was working more. I loved what I was doing, but I was literally capped out and I knew I couldn't do it forever. So I think that's really where my why wow. is of why I help people now. So I was in that spot doing everything. I realized my business would not survive very long without me. So I really took a step back, looked at what the worst case scenario was. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So I really started putting systems in place and then delegating everything. And then that kind of fast forward to where we are today of I see so many business owners who probably really good service. They're best at what they do, but they're just stuck working in their business 24/7. They're ready to throw in the towel. They're ready to go back and get a job. And I don't want them to do any of that. I want them to, you know, achieve the income and freedom that they know is possible and then build an asset that's actually valuable. So that way they can either sell it, transfer, you know, the leadership to someone else in their family. A lot of times business owners want to pass it down to their kids or hire somebody to run it and just collect, you know, more or less passive income and cashing in on all the work and risk that they put in over time.
Very cool, man. Why do you think it is that we're put into this, I call it the pipeline, the assembly line of go to school, get good grades, go to school, get good grades, go to college, get a corporate job. Where did this come from? Like you're an outlier if you're an entrepreneur. You're a black sheep if you're a business owner. Yet everywhere you look, there's businesses. Like the corner gas station's a business of somebody. Walmart's a business of somebody. Target, like there's businesses everywhere. But if you have a business, no. Can't have that. You're just weird.
That's a really good question. And it probably goes back to way before we were around thinking about this stuff. But, you know, when the Industrial Revolution comes along and everyone starts getting jobs and you know, before that, it was like, hey, what do you do? Well, I fix shoes. Okay, well, I'll trade you fixing shoes for, you know, you being a blacksmith and whatever. So it's more or less just what you're good at, and we'll just kind of barter and trade and figure that out. And then the Industrial Revolution happens. And
there you go.
But I think it probably, I mean, now the world is so flat compared to, I mean, really, in order to get an education before, we had to go to school. Like, there was no choice unless you wanted to go to a library and, like, dig through an encyclopedia and check out books. But now, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens with the university system, because eventually it's the return on the investment's not going to be there when you can get all that information they're teaching us is not held behind those big gates anymore. Literally, you can just go to Google and figure out everything you need to learn in college. So I think it's going to be an interesting time, but I think it's just, and maybe that's where how our parents were raised is like, hey, you got to go get an education because I never did. And you got to graduate high school because I never did it. Well, then our parents graduated high school. It's like, well, you got to do more than they did. So now you got to go to college. And when it was affordable, maybe it made sense. But now the price of college is just going through the roof, which is a whole nother discussion. So, but you're totally right. Like, I mean, even when I was like, you can't just go be a plumber. Like, you have to, like, go get a real job. But, I mean, now if you're a plumber, you're making six figures and your job can't be outsourced. So. I don't really know. I just know that it's messed up.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not to mention that the student debt is almost to the point of the national debt. Like, I mean, if you really look at the numbers, you know, it's approaching, it's like $800 billion or whatever for student debt for college. That's insane.
That's not crazy. To then go get a job, you're making $35,000 to $40,000 a year and you're $200,000 in debt.
Right.
And it's all subsidized by the government. So when the government says you're guaranteed to get student loans, well, then that encourages the universities to continue raising prices because they know they're guaranteed to get paid. So it's kind of a it's a mess that you probably don't want to be in. And then a lot of people can't get a job because they got, you know, history of whatever degree, and it really doesn't transition into the real world. So, well, then I'll go get my master's, and then I'll go get my PhD. And then you're $500,000 in debt, and you don't really have the ability to make any money still.
Right. No, yeah, man, you're 100%, man, 100%. I come from a family of entrepreneurs, and I also come from a family of that, you know, has gone to college, you know. And I'll tell you that the people who have gone to college 15 years later are still paying off student loans, like paying off a house, like 30 years, you know, like. That's why they give you an option, like 15-year or 30-year for the house. But I don't know if you get that option when you're paying for student loans. So, but I know that my family is still paying off student loans 15 years later. And there's also a statistic out there, since we're on the topic, that 60% of college graduates are not using the degree in their industry. They're doing something else.
Yeah, and I think that number is only going to go up as – people have more and more options than ever. I mean, before you were basically limited to the town that you live in, right? And people didn't really move, but now people move a lot more fluidly. It's a lot easier to communicate with family. Before, if you moved to LA from New York, it'd be like, I'm never going to be able to talk to you. I'll write you a letter. And, you know, but now you can chat 24/7. And if you're in LA, you can literally work in New York because of the power of the internet. So people just have a lot more options, a lot more flexibility. And I think people are starting to buck the trend of, well, just because I got a degree in this doesn't mean I need to do it for the rest of my life. Kudos to them. They still have to pay off the debt, though.
Right? Or unless you get the debt forgiveness. But anyway, they still have to pay it off. So let's go back and talk about a transformational moment. I love how you – like this is the part of the show that I absolutely love. It's like the behind-the-scenes thing. Like, all we see on Facebook and social medias and everything else is like, well, he's super successful. Paul's crushing it. Like, you know, he's getting rid of people's chaos in their life, and they're making changes and transformations. But you don't see the stuff, like, behind the scenes, you know? So talk real quick about something that you did differently, a transformational moment. Once you put the systems in place, like, just talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest transformation moment that, you know, helped me get to where I am today, obviously, is literally, I think it was a Friday, and I was sitting there, I was like, we have more demand for our business, and I literally can't fulfill it. I'm already working 12, 14-hour days, and there's literally no more time in the day to run this thing. I would love to be able to and be able to fill all that demand, but I can't. And I wasn't really stressed out because I was just pumped not to be working in a cubicle. I'd rather work 80 hours a week for myself than working 40 hours a week in a cube. But I just knew that I wasn't reaching my full potential. So I literally asked myself, what would happen if I got hit by a bus? And I realized answering that question was probably the biggest transformational moment, because I realized if I got hit by a bus, my business would go to zero really quickly. And I would be, you know, letting down a lot of people, my customers, my employees, my family, and nobody would know what to do. Be like, I don't know. It's all in Paul's head. And there's nothing left to pick up the pieces. We can kind of wing it, but, you know, it never would be a viable thing. Whereas at least if your business doesn't need you to survive and you got hit by a bus, your spouse, your family could sell it. Your work, your employees could continue to run it. So that was probably the biggest transformational moment. And then once I started doing that, you know, it was more like a drug. It was like I started delegating things and started delegating more, which freed up more and more of my time to then continue to work on the business. So obviously there's a ton of transformational moments, but behind the scenes, you know, to the customers, like, wow, this business is great. It's super easy. You know, he's probably just sitting around playing golf every day. But behind the scenes, because it was a fun business. So we ran after school golf and tennis programs for kids. We ran summer camps for kids. So it was super rewarding, super fun. And a lot of times the parents would be like, this is really cool, but what do you do for your job? Like, yeah, you're hanging out at the golf course with these kids, but what do you do for a job? Like, it's like, well, actually this thing takes a lot of time to run. It's just like any other business. We just have to be, you know, yeah, we're just selling something really cool instead of like, you know, Subway sandwiches or something like that. So, so that was really, you know, behind the scenes, they didn't see all the stuff that has to go on and all the dirty work and all the mistakes and all that. You know, so I think that was probably the biggest transformational moment, because that allowed me to really maximize the potential of that business to sell it for a really good return and now help other business owners who provide a really cool, great service, and they just need help on the back end getting everything put together.
Wait a minute. So how do you exit a business like that? I mean, I've built three businesses while serving in the military, and I exited those simply by somebody buying me out. And basically taking over operations. I've dissolved myself from it. They have the license. They have, you know, lawyer, whatever. But how would you exit something like that?
So yeah, so
would it be
basically
the same way?
Basically, just to give all the listeners out there a really easy example, this is exactly what happened. So if you own a small business out there and you're thinking, how do I sell this thing? I want to sell it someday. I met with a business broker, a friend of mine, and they basically analyzed, you know, three or four different main things. One, how are you growing year over year? Two, is there still potential in the market for whoever takes it over to take it to the next level? And then three, how well does this business do without the owner? Because someone's not going to buy a business that needs the owner, because then they have to pay you to run it, or they have to try and figure it out on their own, and then it's really not an investable asset at all. So basically looked at those three things. So we were growing like, I don't know, 50 to 60% a year. There was still a ton of potential in the market. And then it didn't need me to survive, and we were still clearing a good amount. So literally whoever bought it could – it already had all the people running it, so they could literally just be the leader, be the CEO, whatever you want to call it, and make a really good return on their investment and get their money back, you know, fairly quickly. So business broker listed it. Someone came up literally within a week. They said, this thing's going to take 6 to 9 months to sell of this size. I had a letter of intent in a week, which I was not planning for. I was planning on the 6 to 9 months, and it was sold within 45 days. I think after that was due diligence. And then I stayed on for 2 months. So, we closed in October, and I was out of the business completely by December.
Wow.
So that's how it happened. I was planning closing the following June, but it was done. Done and dusted before the end of the year.
I think when my wife and I, we exited ours. I mean, it was 2 months, 3 months, something like that. I mean, it was like negotiations, and it was like, we'll do this, and what about this? And it was like, because you put it up for sale, like, think about selling the business. Like, we're going to sell, you know. And so you have to weed out all the people that are, like, lowballing and everything. But, you know, once you find the person, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, oh, we'll buy it tomorrow. Like, oh, said and done, let's do it. Like, money exchanges hands and we're out. Like, it took a while.
Yeah. So, yeah, so that's really how we exited. And really, with it being a service-based business, they're really counting on the fact that your people are the ones delivering the service, because there's no real tangible assets. It's not like you're buying a building and, you know, a bunch of trucks and all that stuff. It was literally just a service that we provide. So if you own a service-based business out there and you are still an integral part of it, you need a plan to not be an integral part of it if you ever want to cash in on all the blood and sweat, tears, and all the work you put into it, you know, to get it to where it is today.
Absolutely. And I'm a huge, like, business strategist person. Like, for example, I was new to podcasting. Last year, I started the show February of last year. And so I would ask, like, hey, Paul, come on the show. You're like, yeah, when is it? I'm like, pick a day. You know, like, now I have Calendly. Like, I was manually plugging people in and, like, oh, I need this, I need this. Like, sending them all these updates, like, hand jamming everything. I'm like, this sucks, dude. Like, I need something, like a schedule. So I'm just Googling, like, automatic scheduler, like, automated scheduling, whatever. And then a couple came up. I'm like, huh. And then, of course, I ask around, and I chose Calendly. Just that one system freed up hours of my time. Like, hold on, let me look at my calendar. I got to pull up my calendar. Like, you know, so it had a little bit of time of setting up, you know, what days I record and what this and that and, you know, whatever. And when I first set it up, I was doing every Wednesday, every Friday, whatever. Now I'm literally like Tuesday through Friday. Like, the show has gotten so popular, thank God. It's Tuesday through Friday. So I've had to go in, recalculate some things, put in more dates, you know. But I do not know how I ever did it without this thing. Like, for the first 2-3 months, like, oh my gosh, hand jam everything. But just literally that one system, and that got me hooked. Like, what other automated stuff do they got? Like, what else is out there? So I start, and now I have so many systems in place, you know, where I could just, like, we literally took a month off, and I went on a speaking tour last month in September, went to 3 states, 4 speaking engagements, and yet my business thrived. Like, literally, I walked away from that month with more money than I'd had ever, you know, in the business, and more people signed on. I got booked to speak at more places, and it's just, and I didn't have to do anything. I showed up to speak, and then here's this link, here's this, and it thrived. And I was like, this is
funny how that works.
Like, how did this happen? Right? I was like, babe, look what just happened. And I was just blown away. I'm like, this is amazing. And it just felt good. Like, I didn't have to have my hands in the cookie jar, right?
Yeah. And that's really, that's really the key. I tell everybody, if you're sitting around saying, I wish there was a piece of technology that could do this for me, if you go to Google, you'll probably find one. So always right. Having that kind of systems and processes mindset going of, before you do something manually, you should probably Google and say, is there a way to do this easier? And Google will give you about 100 million responses in less than a second.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely, man. So you have systems, you have strategies, like, rocking it, right? Like, we're talking about thriving, whatever. So what is your plan moving forward? Like, is this the business for you, or you help other people put systems and strategies and everything in place, but what is the future looking like for you?
Yeah. So basically it's all along that same realm, finding service-based businesses that provide a really good service. And maybe I get into product-based businesses or something along the lines of that eventually, but really finding businesses that have a great thing that they sell, but they're terrible at running the business. Like, they can't get out of their own way. They know what they need. They just can't do it. They're scared, whatever it is. They're just not to that point where I'm comfortable doing this. So finding those businesses and then doing one of two things with them, either, you know, becoming their coach and walking them through the process to build the foundation, put the systems and processes in place, building a team, getting your calendar straight, getting your schedule straight, getting rid of all the distractions, and really leveraging their business to build a life that they love, uncovering that income and freedom that they always knew was possible. Or if it's a local business, I'm in Raleigh. So if it's a local business in Raleigh, I'm also starting to either invest in or buy businesses that provide a really good service and they're not so good on the back end. And there's a lot of opportunity for growth. So, kind of building a conglomerate, if you want to call it, on a very local level, acquiring or partnering with local businesses that provide a really good service and they just need help on the back end so they can focus on what they're really good at. So right now I'm a partner in a landscaping business. They provide a really good service. Their back end was kind of a mess. It got them to a certain point, but now they want to take it to the next level. So they need someone like me to come in and do just that. Make sure the foundation's there and the systems and processes are there and the people are there so they can go really capitalize on the demand that's in the market. Earlier this year, I bought a dog walking business, ironically. So another kind of industry that most people that are in the dog walking business, they're people that love walking dogs and they're terrible at running businesses. Not all of them, but most of them, that's how they start. Yeah. Hey, I'll walk my neighbor's dog. Oh, my other neighbor needs a dog walk. And then all of a sudden they're walking 20 dogs a day and that's as much as they can do. And they don't want to hire people because they don't trust anybody. So I saw an opportunity in that market, bought an existing dog walking business who had a great online reputation, you know, really good brand name out there, but they needed a lot of work on the back end, website, systems, QuickBooks, technology in place, people in place, actually hiring, you know, hiring employees to do the work, that type of thing. So that's really kind of the two main things that I'm going to be focusing on now and in the long term. One, continue to coach people and help them, you know, through that model. But then also, if they are here local in the Raleigh area, if they need more help than just, hey, let's have a 1 hour call a week, then there could be an opportunity to either buy into that business, invest into that business, or buy a business outright that they're just looking to exit, but it's not really sellable. And they have a really good brand, but they're at that point where they're just burned out.
Right. So, man, I did not even realize that you are in Raleigh. I'm an hour away.
Where are you at?
I'm in Goldsboro.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina.
No kidding. So we're going to have to hook up, man, because I got some high-profile business people that are friends of mine in Raleigh. And I'll have to connect you. And, you know, they have podcasts and they do some other stuff. And they're speakers and, you know. So
that would be great.
I'll have to bring you to the circle, man. I didn't even realize you were in Raleigh.
How about that?
That's crazy. Awesome. Huh. So moving forward, does your systems and strategies, you know, I'm not sure if it's a one size fits all. Do they work for any type of business? Because we see the different business models, right? We see the home-based business or like direct sales. You know, you have like Scentsy and LuLaRoe and all that stuff, right? Home-based, like direct sales. Then you got internet, you know, you got the marketing, the network marketing,
right.
The mass marketing, spamming that you see. You got relationship marketing, you got affiliate marketing, they're all business, right? Does it work for all businesses or is it more geared towards certain types?
Yeah, I mean, you can really do it with any business. I mean, it's really the fundamentals of business. If anybody's read books like The E-Myth or Built to Sell, you can really do it with any business. It's the fundamentals of business. That's what it is. But what I really like doing are businesses that have the ability to provide a really good customer experience. So, you know, I've worked with people of all types. I've worked with auto mechanics, people running auto shops, HVAC people, restaurant owners. You know, I've worked with people from all landscaping. I'm doing it in my dog walking business. I've worked, you know, people running after school programs. So it really works for literally any business. But what I really love is the ability to take a business that, you know, provides a really good service and then add the customer experience to it, which then you're really able to leverage to take that business to the next level. So no matter what business someone's doing, there's a million other people doing the exact same thing in the consumer's eyes. So how do you set yourself apart? It's not what you're selling, it's how you're selling it. So you're in North Carolina. So like Chick-fil-A is a perfect example. Yes, their chicken's good, but like literally they do twice as much revenue as any other fast food restaurant and they're not even open on Sunday. So like, how can one store that just sells chicken do twice as much revenue per store than any other fast food restaurant? It's not really what they sell, it's how they deliver it and the customer experience. So I really like focusing on businesses that have the ability to do that because it just makes it that much more fun, especially from the business owner standpoint when they start to get that feedback from, you know, their end user. It really does add another level to it. So that's what I really like focusing on.
Nice. Man, I love that. And you started mentioning some books. I absolutely love The E-Myth. In my opinion, the best business book that I have ever read is Christopher Lockhead's book, Play Bigger, How Pirates, Dreamers, and Innovators Create and Dominate Markets. Christopher Lockhead is the host of Legends and Losers podcast and the godfather of category design business strategy. So inside of his book, he talks about how to become basically a category king. Like Uber's a category king, Walmart, Amazon, you know, like these are Salesforce, like these are the category kings. So how did that happen? How exactly did these companies become to rule everything? You know, we see Kmart's closing. Back there was a store years ago we used to shop at when we were kids, Mervyn's, that's gone. Sears is on the brink of destruction. Toys R Us is gone. You know, Toys R Us was the category king, but they never changed. They never did anything different. And the whole thing about category design is doing something different, not better. But it's creating a category that only you can play in. And so we saw Uber, and then we saw Lyft and Rideshare and like all these other places start, you know, popping up. But Uber did it first. So they're the category king. Coke is a category king. Pepsi is never going to catch them because Coke just does it better because they've been doing it longer. And so for anybody listening, for my opinion, it is the best business analysis book on the market today. You're not going to find a better one. It literally analyzes the way that these businesses were created and how you can duplicate the same process.
Awesome. I have not read it. I've heard a lot of good things about it, actually. The more people talk about it and talk about the podcast and the podcasting world, and I know even on my podcast, a lot of people have recommended it. But it is, I mean, it's so true. Just, I mean, even if you look at Netflix and Blockbuster, like Netflix Blockbuster, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago and said, hey, do you want to buy us for like $50 million or whatever it was, like pennies on the dollar? And Blockbuster said, no, y'all are crazy. Who the heck's going to buy all these DVDs through the mail and streaming things? And, you know, even, I mean, Netflix had to pivot, right? If they were still just sending DVDs in the mail, they'd be out of business. So that's just another perfect example. And now there's, I mean, you see the articles online, there's like one Blockbuster left, and now it's just kind of like a tourist attraction, wherever it is, not, you know, not actually making money renting out DVDs and VHS. I mean, it's totally true. And I think dominating your category, not trying to do everything, but trying to do your one thing, you know, better, different than anybody else.
Right. And, you know, with Redbox, that's actually kind of taken over that DVD rental, right? I mean, Netflix started like direct mail, and they're like, oh, you just order it from your house and it'll come to the mail in like a day or two, you know? So like on a Wednesday, you would just go ahead and order the movie for like a Friday and Saturday, mail it back, you know? And even that, like you said, even that changed, you know, as we learned, you know, how to stream things and how to use the internet and how to, you know, even that platform changed. And I mean, I know people now that like, why would I ever go back to cable? I could just get on Netflix. Like,
right.
It just becomes a thing. Like, why would I ever, like, what are you talking about DVDs? Like, I don't own a DVD. Right. And even then, if you have a DVD player, you're kind of ancient because now they have Blu-ray players. And even then with the Blu-ray players, you have a gaming system that plays like everything anyway. So it's like, why would I need that? You know? So yeah, absolutely. That story, I can't hear it enough because it just goes to show if you put the systems in place, if you put the foundational systems and strategies in place first, right? You don't put the walls up, then you don't put the foundation. Like, that doesn't work. You put the foundation down, then you put the walls up, then you put the roof on. It has to be done this way. So my question for you is, if someone is getting ready to build a business, what do you tell them? What is your... not like your full coaching strategy, but like, what are some things that you tell them that they need to have in place?
Yeah. So, I mean, if they're literally like, they're still sitting there in their cube and like, I always wanted to start a business. One, you have more time than you think. So you have 168 hours in the week. People say they don't have time. So if you're working a 9-to-5, it's more like a 7-to-7. So you're working for 12 hours a day. So you're working 60 hours a week. So you're down to 108 hours for that week. And you sleep for 8 hours a night, so that's 56. So now you're down to 52 hours. So what do you do with those 52 hours? You can literally run a business while still working. And then once that business is making more than your, you know, the opportunity cost of staying at work or staying home and building your business flips, then you quit your job. So if you're scared about the financial situation there. But I think what hangs up so many people before even starting is they see, well, somebody's already doing that. And I think that's the best validation that your business could work. If you say, I want to start a chicken sandwich shop. Well, that's great because there's a demand there because other people are selling chicken sandwiches. But if you said something crazy off the wall and no one's doing it, 1 out of 1,000 of those might do it. And if they do it, it's going to be, you know, a total home run. That's what I think people are always thinking of, the next latest and greatest thing, which very rarely happens. And this, it's 2018.
Right.
Pretty much, unless you have a bunch of money, pretty much everything that you're going to start up, someone's already done. So I think the key is to realize that that's a good thing. Like, if you wanted, you know, if you want to do something, first go to your market and see if someone else is doing it and if they're doing it successfully. If they are, then you should probably start that business because it means there is demand in the market for that. So I think, you know, before you even get into anything, I think that's the key. And then you just need to start perfecting that craft. So like in the landscaping business, I think anybody, literally you can go take your lawnmower that's in your garage and you're a land, you're, all of a sudden you're in business with a landscaping business. So perfect that craft, build up that customer, you know, you're building the systems, but you also have to perfect the craft so that when you hire somebody, you can teach them, this is how it's done, show them how it's done, give them a step-by-step sheet of how it's done, instead of just saying, well, I'm going to hire a bunch of people to cut grass and hope it works. Well, maybe 2 out of 10 are going to do it the way you want them to do it. And the other 8 might have said they were really good at cutting grass, but then they screwed up the lawn and then you're out of business. So, you know, really take the time to perfect your craft with always having a systems and processes mindset in place of, could I teach somebody else to do this the way that I'm doing it? And if the answer is no, because you're doing it a different way every time, first you need to do things in a systematic way. Then you need to document how it's done. So that way, this is how it's done. So that when you do delegate it, then they're going to have a proven system to follow. And I think once people start doing that, kind of the last caveat, a lot of people get hung up of, I don't have the money to pay someone 40 hours a week to do this. And you don't have to. Like in this gig economy, like I own a dog walking business. I hire a bunch of, you know, most of my employees are stay-at-home moms who are looking, they don't want a full-time job. They just want to do something fun and make a couple hundred bucks a week. So, you know, as long as you approach those people in a transparent way, in an honest way, like, hey, you might not work at all for the first couple of weeks. And then as we bring on more clients, you're going to start working more and more and more. Mm-hmm. So if you're delegating that, that's how it might look. If you're delegating office work, there's plenty of people that they just want to work an hour a day, or there's virtual assistants that will check your email all day and then just tell you which emails you need to respond to, and they've handled everything else. So a lot of things people don't realize that you don't need to have a lot of money. If you can pay somebody $15 an hour to go do $30 an hour work, you're basically doubling your investment. You're paying $15 to get an hour back to then go make $30 an hour. And then you take that $30 and delegate another hour at $15. So now you spent 30, but now you're making 60 and you've saved 2 hours. So it's having that mindset that you don't need to find somebody full-time. You don't need someone even guaranteed part-time. Just find somebody that needs to fit the needs of your business. And if it's an hour a day that allows you to go out and network, great, do it. Get rid of it and move on to the next thing.
I love it. Have you ever thought of starting a podcast about this?
Yeah, I have. And I actually have one.
What's the podcast called?
It's called the Business Owners Freedom Formula Show. And we're on 205 episodes as of today, Wednesday, October 3rd, for those that are listening live.
Dude, I love the show, man. I've caught a couple episodes, and you guys, man, you just dig in. You know,
we
do. Every episode that I've heard, you dig in. I'm like, holy crap. Like, I have to go back and listen to it because I didn't catch it all the first time. I have to go back and listen to it. So yeah, man. So give the listeners another tell the listeners again what it's called.
So the podcast is Business Owners Freedom Formula Show. You can find it on wherever you're listening. If you're listening to this podcast, you can find it in that same spot, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts, it's there.
Perfect. Perfect. So what made you start the podcast?
Really what kind of started my whole journey, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, whenever it was starting to listen to podcasts, starting reading books. I hated reading books up until that point. Like I went to college when I was in college, I didn't read one book. I just went to every class and that's how I learned. I hated reading all the books if they weren't business related books, I would just go read the Cliff Notes or the Spark Notes. I just hated reading. But once I got into the business and I was kind of stuck, I was like, okay, I know there's people that have figured this stuff out. So I started listening to podcasts, started reading books, got kind of hooked. And then once I sold my business, I was like, I'll start a podcast. And I started one originally. I started it earlier than I expected because I sold my business way earlier than I expected. And I just loved the community of bringing people on, It's a really tight-knit community. Everyone's willing to share, willing to help. It's not like, hey, you're going to steal my customers type of thing. I mean, I bring on other business coaches on my podcast. I don't care. There's 7 billion people in this world, and I only need like 10 of them to, you know, do everything that I want to do. So that's really kind of how I got into it. And, you know, it's just like anything else. The more you do it, the better you get at it. So 205 episodes later, it's still going strong. And I really just, I mean, I work from home most days, so it's nice to just talk to other people because normally I don't talk to anybody.
That's awesome. You know, I didn't know that. I really didn't know, you know, a lot about, I mean, I listen to podcasts and I just said, you know what, it has to be part of my strategy. Like, you know, as a speaker, you know, you kind of have to have a book, or you kind of have, like, that's what the experts sometimes, or you'll see a weird message on Facebook. Like, if you want to be a speaker, you have to have a book because authority comes from author and, you know, whatever. But I was like, well, I just see what's happening with, you know, with like Netflix and everything and streaming and Amazon Fire Stick. And I see, like, you know, I see the things that are happening. And right now, and I started it last year, so I always keep up with the statistics, right? So right now, 30 to 40% more people have listened to podcasts than last year. That's just in 1 year. Podcast is a $314 million market. So a lot of the ecosystem that is, let's pay, you know, $50,000 for a commercial, for a 30-second commercial on TV, it's going to podcasts. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I sell commercials to my show. So somebody will probably buy a commercial to this show because they're going to hear you talking about your podcast and business, whatever. And then like tomorrow you'll go to listen to your episode and maybe somebody bought a commercial to it. So I sell commercials and I sell like the different things. So there's a monetization strategy to the podcast. And we talk about not the podcast business, but the business of podcasting. I know people that are making 6 figures from a podcast. You got Patreon, you can sell ads, the monetization strategy. I know podcasters that are right now like me would go, hey, all the listeners of the Business Owners Freedom Formula Show, this is Sean Douglas, host of Life Transformation Radio. You're listening to my favorite show, the Business Owners Freedom Formula. Here we go. And then the show opens. So other podcasters are actually doing commercials for other podcasters' shows and advertising each other's shows that way. Like, there's a lot of craziness that's going on in the podcast world right now, and I'm just loving being a part of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, there is, and I think it's more – I mean, I think the power of audio as people get busier and busier is they can listen to it while doing something else. You can't do that with video. Even though video is powerful on your phone, the TV, I don't really know who still watches commercials, so – whenever all those right. big companies that are spending billions of dollars for commercials that they can't measure and nobody's actually watching, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, as cars get more and more connected, you know, people are just going to listen to more and more podcasts. And I'm sure it's going to get more and more saturated. So it's going to depend on the niche, how long you've been doing it. Maybe it gets more localized. Like, hey, there's the Raleigh podcast station and there's all these podcasts that, you know, are focused on what's going on in Raleigh. Who knows what's going to happen, but, it's just a really cool medium to meet people, get your word out there and, you know, connect with, I mean, people are letting you into their lives. I mean, they're giving you 30 to 40 minutes of your time or their time to listen to you. So I think that's pretty cool.
Oh yeah. So if you, I know this is a terrible question. If you had to, tell us what episode of yours is one of your favorites or one that really just stands out, recommend an episode for our listeners to go ahead and listen to your show.
Yeah, that's a good question. So if
that's
you're
a hard question,
action,
I know.
That's a very hard question. If you're a business owner looking for really quick actionable advice, my Wednesday and Friday episodes, they're all like less than 10 minutes of something, go do this, it works, or don't go do this, it doesn't work because I just tried it. But I would say the episode that's made the biggest impact on me, I think it's episode 4. So Tom Schwab, I don't know if you know Tom Schwab, but he's...
Oh, I love Tom Schwab. Yeah, so, we're connected. I know him. Yep.
So Tom has the world record of being the guest on the most podcasts or whatever. He owns a company called Interview Valet. He connects podcast guests with podcast hosts. That's where actually I get a lot of my guests on my show. So kudos to Interview Valet. But the quote that he said still impacts me every day is, "What's simple and ordinary to you is amazing to others." So for everybody out there who says, this isn't special, whatever I do, it really is, because to most people, they don't even know what the heck you do. So you are an expert to way more people than you think. And that quote, I mean, that episode in general is really good about talking about podcasting and why you should get into it and how powerful it can be. But really just that quote, I think out of all the interviews I've done, just sticks with me the most.
So I'll give you mine just because I have a soft spot. My very, very, very good friend, and you have amazing people on the show, but my very good, close, personal friend, Diego Corzo, was on your show, and he is just an amazing, amazing human being. He's a real estate guy, building freedom through real estate. He's got a house hacking course. He's an entrepreneur from Austin, Texas, and he was on your show back in the 130s or 140s episode or something like that. And I remember you also had Mark Mawhinney on the show, which is another amazing, cool dude that I'm connected with. So, I mean, you have amazing, like, it just cruising through the guests, you know, when I was researching the show, like, I had Divya Parekh on my show. Diego was on my show. We're in the same mastermind, Diego and I. So for everybody listening, like, if you have not heard the Business Owners Freedom Formula show, you have to check this show out, because the list of guests on this is bar none some of the best I've seen out of a collection of a podcast. I mean, you've really attracted some real high-named people to the show. So well done, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I would say Diego, I mean, as far as guests go, I still connect, still follow what he's doing, and you know, chat with him once in a while on Facebook, and the stuff that he's doing, he's part of the DACA program. So not to get too political,
yep,
but like he is
such
an advocate for that. He's paying, I forget what one of his posts said, like he's paying like $80,000 a year in taxes. And if the administration gets rid of this, he might get sent back. And like, he is doing so much for not only business owners and homeowners and investors and immigrants, but like the stuff that he does is just game changing and changing people's lives. So if you guys aren't following what Diego's doing, just look him up, Diego Corzo. He's got a ton of different cool things going on. But yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, it's definitely a work in progress. You know, the first couple episodes, you kind of fumble through, and then you get a little bit better, and you get a little bit better guests. And then you get the ability to be a little bit more picky of who comes on your show. But I tell everybody, I learn just as much as the listeners do when I get to interview anybody. I mean, it really is, you know, pretty grateful to be able to talk with those people. And the questions that I ask them is really just, you know, me learning in order to help the listeners learn.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. You know, and you're so right, man. I learned things from you, and I learned things from all the guests that come out. I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. Like, that's awesome. So I love that I interview podcasters as well. Not only does it make for an amazing show, just because we kind of know the business, right? I mean, we kind of just know how to guest and know how to answer. Like, there's nuances that we just have, but we just bring another level of what we do onto the show. You know what I mean? Like, that's just one avenue. Like, the podcast is just one avenue. We have this and this and this and this and, you know, but we bring insight from everybody that we've had on the show. So I don't know what I'm going to do for my 200th episode. I'm at 155. I think you're 156, actually. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do something special, though. But podcasting has led me to speak on Steve Ulscher's event, New Media Summit. It's for 40 top podcasters to come and speak about the business of podcasting. And I spoke at Ever Gonzalez's event with me and Jeremy Ryan Slate, who is the host of Create Your Own Life podcast. Him and I spoke at an event, Ever Gonzalez's event, the Outliers Podcast Festival, earlier this year in St. George, Utah. So podcasting really, as a branch of your business, can lead to you speaking on stage, you becoming part of somebody's network. So I tell everybody, like, listen to podcasts and listen to what these people are telling you.
you know, because you're going to get 100 different answers, but you need these 100 different answers to find the strategies that work for you.
I agree 100%.
Perfect. Because it sounds so much better in my head.
I got nothing. You said it all. I got nothing.
Perfect. So as we start to wrap the show, what are some resources? You know, do you have e-books? Do you have an online course? How do people get in touch with you? Shamelessly plug your brilliance. How do people get a hold of you?
Shamelessly plug.
Shamelessly plug.
Yeah. So I don't have any online courses. I don't sell online courses to teach you how to sell online courses. I don't do any of that. I just help real business owners help them build real
That's
businesses.
Awesome.
Nothing against people that internet market and run Facebook ads to teach you how to run Facebook ads and all that stuff. But really the easiest way is just go to my website, paulmaskill.com. If you do want some free actionable advice, I do have a PDF download on there. And if it's easier, you just go to paulmaskill.com/pivot, P-I-V-O-T, how to pivot when you've plateaued, the 6 mistakes that you need to avoid in order to break through. So it's really geared towards those people who have hit that ceiling. They know there's more potential. They just don't know how to get to the next level. So the 6 mistakes basically that I made, the 6 mistakes that I see a lot of business owners make. So I want you, if you are a business owner, to avoid them. So just go to paulmaskill.com/pivot. Or if you just want to chat with me, you can always find me on Facebook, LinkedIn. Or if you just go to my website, my email address is there. I'm literally happy to talk to any business owner that wants to reach out.
Perfect. Love it. So as we close the show, can you deliver the best nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action today?
The worst case scenario is never as bad as you think it's going to be.
Oh, I like that. I think the worst case scenario is death. Like, I mean, with no empathy involved, you know, like the worst case scenario is death. So as long as that's not happening, I think you're in a pretty good place.
So many people, whether it's business or life, they never take action because they're scared of something that's probably not going to happen. And even if that thing happened, it's actually not that scary. And if you totally fail and your business crashes and burns or whatever, it's not over. Like, life is a really long thing, usually, you know, if we're lucky enough. But it's a really good learning opportunity. I mean, once I kind of realized that it's okay to make a mistake, and the best thing about making mistakes is then you can put a system in place to make sure they never happen again. So the only way to get better is by screwing up, making mistakes, and realizing that as long as we keep moving forward, we're going to get to where we want to go. So the worst case scenario is never as bad as anybody thinks it's going to be.
Absolutely. You know, John Maxwell has a book called Failing Forward that is amazing, amazing about this right here. Amazing. It's called Failing Forward, and it literally tells you how to bounce back from failure or how to move forward through failure and using failure as a learning experience. So absolutely, 100%. Couldn't have said it better. So, dude, I appreciate your time. And I'm going to have to – next time I'm in Raleigh, man, we'll have to get together. I'll call my friends up and, we'll get together and have like a mastermind dinner or something. I didn't even know you were in Raleigh.
Yeah, let's make it happen. I'm always here.
Awesome, man. So, yeah, appreciate you, man. And thank you for being a guest on Life Transformation Radio.
Yeah, thank you so much, John. Really enjoyed it.
Life Transformation Radio listeners, an amazing guest crushing it in his world, in his business, and he's elevating lives all around him. If anything resonated with you, contact him on Facebook, LinkedIn, and go to his website, www.paulmaskill.com, paulmaskill.com. Subscribe, rate, and review to his show, The Business Owner's Freedom Formula Show. Subscribe, rate, and review his show, and then go ahead and, since you're there, subscribe, rate, and review to Life Transformation Radio. I want to appreciate all of the listeners who have supported the show. And as we close, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, Have a great life.